The controller's the person standing at the back of the boat, radioing up to the bridge, that everything behind the boat looks great. The CFO is standing on the bridge next to the captain, helping he or she navigate around obstacles and choose the best path into the future. So if you accept that reference of differences of viewpoint, which we absolutely do and we see it, every company needs that from the beginning to be able to see where they're going.
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOcoachingInternational.com. How do you staff up the financial side of your company to ensure you get not just the data, but the information and insight you need to make big decisions? Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is Scott Crawford. Scott is a partner with Preferred CFO, which is a company that provides outsourced CFO and controller services to companies seeking to elevate financial strategy, overcome challenges, maximize profits, and accelerate growth. In today's show, we discuss the CEO's role in the financial side of the business, the key players you need on your financial team, and the six essential financial tools every company needs to ensure you know exactly what's going on with your numbers. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Scott Crawford. There have been some studies that have shown that poor cash flow management is one of the biggest reasons why a company fails. And we've also heard that idea that companies can grow broke, meaning that if you're growing too fast, if you're not allowing the cash flow to catch up with the fast growth, you could have a serious problem. So we both understand the importance of appropriate financial management. You're in the business of helping people make sure that they have appropriate financial management. So I'd love for you to set the stage here a bit and talk about the financial side of running a fast-growing company. What are some things that we need to be thinking about in that area?
Yeah, excellent opening. That is so very true. I think most people think that the companies that are experiencing cash flow difficulties are going out of business. And certainly that is a symptom of that. But you can also be cash starved when you're growing and you just did not anticipate those cash needs. Sometimes they're longer term. More often than not, they're short term. We took on a client a while ago that had a very fast growing company doing distribution. And the founder was not a business person, but was great at logistics. And he was sent to us on the recommendation of a business leader when he'd gone to a hard money lender, two of them, actually one to cover two different payroll periods. And I said to him, how did you not see payroll coming? You do it every 2 weeks. He said, we added quite a few people in the interim. I didn't realize the impact was going to be quite that great. So this was a very short-term sinkhole that he had created. Sometimes we see those sinkholes occur 6-9 months down the road when companies are adding people or inventory or facilities to drive the growth that they're experiencing, and they don't realize that they have just postponed a liability that's going to come due at some point in time, and they haven't retained the cash for that. So the standard financial tool for almost all companies is a 13-week cash flow, 3 months. And that would certainly have shown the challenge that this transportation company had missing payroll and having to go to hard money lenders to cover that. It would not show some circumstances where you're dealing with extended dating on letters of credit or bringing goods in from overseas where they may not show up until beyond that 13-week cash flow.
Tell me a little bit more about this 13-week cash flow model. Is this just simply like an Excel spreadsheet, or is this an elaborate part of your SAP system, or what does this look like?
It really depends upon what system you're running. So many companies that we deal with that are in this space that we can really help are running QuickBooks, you know, online or desktop. If the system you're running is capable of supporting that, that's a great place to be able to draw the information. We like to work in Excel because it's universally understood. It is able to be drilled down into. It's able to be shared and handoff, or certainly a Google equivalent. But the 13-week cash flow, a couple of the important factors are it should be absolutely as granular as the company can make it. So it should give the AP department and the AR department or individuals a roadmap as to who they're going to pay and when they're going to pay those bills, always 13 weeks into the future. It's not uncommon to have a supplier, certainly in today's market, come to a customer and say, look, I'll give you a discount. I'll give you 2% discount if you'll pay me 30 days early. And so now the AP clerk jumps up, runs down the hall to the CEO's office and said, hey, boss, can we take this 2% discount? I'd love to add that to the bottom line. A 13-week cash flow, if done properly and with sufficient granularity, will allow the AP department to know, if I move this payable, what's the impact upon the other obligations I'm going to have this month and next month, and can we do that? And actually to be able to harvest some of those additional margin bonuses.
Oftentimes, the founder of the company or the CEO of the company, they didn't really rise through the financial side of the organization, and they may not have a lot of financial acumen. What would you say are some of the key things that either the founder of the company or the CEO needs to know about the financial side, even though, again, they're not the expert there, but they need to know enough to know either A, what they don't know, and B, what they should know, so that they aren't losing control of the financial side? So what, in your experience, has been the extent of what the CEO needs to know about the financial side?
You're absolutely right. We know by experience that most CEOs of small and mid-sized companies, most CEOs generally, do not come from a financial background. CFOs are not serial entrepreneurs for the most part, and they generally don't rise to that CEO's office. So if the CEO has a strong sense and background in sales and marketing or in operations, their blind side will be finance. And we don't expect them to know what they don't know. We can certainly, or any good financial advisor can help them understand what tools they should be expecting from their team. If they understand what the proper tools are and can prioritize those that are most important for them to receive, the CEO's job is to set expectations to receive those tools from their financial team and make sure they've got a financial team in place that can deliver those tools. If they don't know about the tools and what benefits they provide, they don't know what to ask for. And therefore, the company is lacking that very important strategic tool.
What are some of the expectations that a CEO should have of their financial team?
So expectations are, we'd actually probably start with some of the tools, but the financial team, a good financial team with a CFO, a controller, certainly an outsourced tax advisor, CPA, and then of course your day-to-day transactionist, your accounts receivable, accounts payable team, they should provide guidance, suggestions, analysis to the CEO. If the head of the financial team is walking into the CEO's office each month at the first of the month and dropping the report on the desk and saying, boss, here's your report for last month and year to date. I'll see you in a month with next month's report. They're not receiving the information they need. It's an interesting exercise when I have the opportunity to meet with small business CEOs and mid-sized business CEOs, even some large business, and a $500 million companies. And we have an exercise where we give them three financial documents that are related, real documents from a real company. And there's a profit and loss, there's a balance sheet, and there's a cash projection. And we give them a certain amount of time to be able to go through them and extract what information those documents are telling. And I look at where they spend their time, and then I ask them to rate their time. And overall, the average, the profit loss is viewed 70% of the time that's available to them. They spend 70% of their time on the P&L and about 20% of their time, 25% of the time on the balance sheet, and 5 to 10% on the cash projections. And then we talk about why that's important. Most CEOs will look at a profit loss, which is historical, and say, here's what has been trending maybe I need to make some adjustments in this area. It looks like I'm falling behind. This one's declining. This one's increasing. But that's just historical information against a historical reference. The balance sheet really is the statement of health of the company, and the cash projection really is the blood flowing through the body of that company. And most CEOs, if they're not financial people, don't understand all the data that's included in those other documents besides the profit and loss. A good financial team should be explaining those. The monthly report, the monthly meeting should take place. Boss, look, I've got the numbers for last month, and I'm noticing a trend in this area that is a little concerning. Happy to drill down and go into detail if you'd like, but I think this is an adjustment we need to make. Conversely, we're seeing some overperformance in this one division, and they've been that way for the last 4 months. And we may want to figure out what they're doing that's different that can be shared with other divisions within the company. That's a true lead financial team, a true CFO. CFOs deal in information. The rest of the financial team, controllers and bookkeepers, they deal in data. And that's the difference between dropping a report on a CEO's desk and saying, here's your numbers, data. And here's what's happened the last month and the last quarter and for the year to date, boss. That's a CFO. That's information.
And I'm glad that you really made that distinction there, because I think of it similar to tax prep versus tax planning. So I might have a tax preparer who just prepares my statements. I need that. But what I also want is, how can you help me plan to pay less taxes in the future? What are some things that I can do legally to pay less taxes? And you're making that same distinction there on the financial side of the business. It's that, yeah, it's one thing, data. Second thing is, what does the data mean? And are there any trends that we need to worry about? And what are some proactive things that we can do to make sure that we don't grow broke, as we started off talking about here? So I think that is a critical distinction. And would you say that that would be one of the best ways that a CEO can know whether or not their financial team is actually doing a great job, by the fact that they're helping interpret the data in addition to preparing the data? Or are there some other things that a CEO can monitor to make sure that their financial team is doing what they need to be doing and they're not going to get blindsided by something down the road?
Great question. And it comes to one of the most universally asked questions that we encounter, and that is, what are the differences between those individuals in a complete financial team? And most specifically, what are the differences between the controller and the CFO? And we identified one very important one, and that is, controllers deal in data, CFOs deal in information, actionable information. So, how do you know if your CFO is a true CFO? They can deliver those forward-facing tools. They can do analytics to dive into or drill down into any financial aspect of the company. And they help the CEO have a reasonable expectation about the future outcome of the financial decisions that are being considered today. Because every financial decision has an impact upon the profitability of a company, the value of the company or the equity, and the cash required to complete. And it comes back to those three key documents: profit and loss, balance sheet, cash projections. So every decision impacts every one of those. And a good financial team led by a true CFO will have the forward-looking documents so that the CEO or the management team can ask those questions. What if we did this? What would the outcome be? And have a reasonable expectation that the answers they'll receive are correct.
Oftentimes, as companies are growing fast, they'll take their financial person, and maybe they were started off as a bookkeeper and they get promoted to a controller. And then they think, oh, well, gosh, Mary or Joe has been here the whole time. Maybe we need to promote them to the CFO. So, what is your advice for a leader who's trying to determine if this financial person has the ability to jump to the next level, and particularly from a controller position to a CFO? And you just mentioned the controller is about data, the CFO is about information. So how can we determine whether that controller actually has the ability to make the jump from data to information to insight?
There is a mindset difference. We know we have controllers as part of our team. We're just under 70 employees. We have controllers as part of our team because sometimes we want to layer. A company needs both controller services and CFO services. It's not cost effective, nor is it in the best interest of the CFO or the CEO of the client to have a CFO do both functions. So having both controllers and CFOs, we see some controllers that can make that mindset change to be CFOs, and some never can. If you are a CEO of a company and you've got that situation where you're promoting someone from within and you're about ready to consider that change from controller to CFO by title and advancement, you should know what skill sets, what mentoring or training that individual received that's going to allow them to move from a rearward-looking to a forward-looking perspective. Maybe they've already had that mindset. They're already delving into that area. They just need to be properly trained and mentored. But if they are the traditional, back in the day, it used to be the green visor accounting department, and they were just in their world. And that really is the mindset of a lot of accounting people and controllers. They live in a world of formulas, they live in a world of data and facts, and they're just not comfortable moving outside of that. So you might have, it's an example, I guess, maybe if the financial team reports to the CEO, hey, the results of last month's performance, the answer is five. And we got to a five because 2 + 3 = 5. It's the formula we use to be able to report our performance last month. That's a controller. And it's a fact. They deal in facts. The CFO might confirm, yeah, it was a five, boss. And it's because 2 + 3 = 5. That was the performance of our divisions last month. But if we could get to 2 × 3 and put a times instead of a plus, what if we could do that? Here's the impact it would have upon our company. And so it's just a different way of thinking about things. We were introduced to a prospective client a year or so ago. And in talking to the CEO, he said, I want you to know I have a very high commitment to promote from within. We always want our employees to see an upward path to advancement. I said, that's great. He said, I want you to know my CFO has been with us for 38 years. That's great. Why are we having this conversation? He said, well, she started 38 years ago as a bookkeeper. We promoted her to senior accounting manager. We promoted her to controller. And 3 years ago, we promoted her to CFO. Great. I've got to fire her. Why? Well, she's miserable. She's not a CFO. We're miserable not receiving the information we need. Why don't you backslide her to controller? Well, we backfilled that position. That person's doing a great job, and I don't have any other choice but to end her career path with us. So that was one of those situations where their best intent was to promote from within, but there was nothing that occurred in the life of that controller, their experience or mentoring that prepared them to become a CFO. And it's a different mindset.
And we see that often where the company grows faster than a team member can keep up. And that's hard to do, just like in that example that you just gave. Someone has been so loyal to the company, and it's like, oh my gosh, they've been so loyal. I hate to let them go, or let's try and find another position in the company, like the feedback that you gave there. Could we move to another position? So yeah, it's a tough situation. And that's one reason why being the CEO is a tough role, because you got to make some of those tough decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I asked a question from time to time of business groups. So, how many of you have fired someone too early? And it always invites laughter because that's never the case. Most people, to your point, they want to be loyal to their employees, to the people that have brought them thus far. But the reality is if a company grows significantly, more often than not, the people that got you from A to B are not the same people to get you from B to C or from C to D. So there has to be an advancement. And sometimes that is at the CEO level as well. They need to bring in advisors. They can still be the founder and the principal and the visionary of the future, but they need to bring in a leadership team that can help them truly implement controls on the operational side and on the finance side and on the marketing side, wherever they're weak, so the company can continue to move to level after level after level.
Since we're talking about people here and hiring, I want to talk about the sequence of hiring on the financial side. So walk me through the trajectory of a fast-growing company in terms of who might be the first financial person you have on the team, and then at some point when people might need your services, having a fractional CFO, perhaps as a bridge to something. So What is the sequence of hiring on the financial side for a company that might go from zero to, say, 100 million or 200 million in revenue?
We believe that every company needs the services of a bookkeeper, of course, an outsourced controller or an outsourced CPA or tax advisor. Again, they're almost always outsourced, a controller and a CFO. There may be some inner positions. There might be a senior accounting manager. There might be a VP of finance, but the primary positions are exactly that. Your daily transactionist, which is your bookkeeper or your accountant, your controller, who's your historian, and your CFO, who is your forecaster. Had a great business leader out of Texas that gave us the analogy that said the controller's the person standing at the back of the boat, radioing up to the bridge, that everything behind the boat looks great. The CFO is standing on the bridge next to the captain, helping he or she navigate around obstacles and choose the best path into the future. So if you accept that reference of differences of viewpoint, which we absolutely do and we see it, every company needs that from the beginning to be able to see where they're going. The issue is they don't need those positions full-time. They don't need a CFO full-time. They may not need a controller full-time, and they may not need a bookkeeper full-time, dependent upon their size and their transaction volume. So our philosophy is always best-in-class deliverables at the best possible price. That best possible price is related to this topic. So we've had companies that are well-funded, particularly in tech, that have come to us and said, we want the entire financial team outsourced. We don't want to do any of it. And we provide them their CFO, their controller, and their bookkeeper. But as they grow, when the demand, the hourly demand for the bookkeeper reaches a full-time level, 40 or 50 hours a week, to achieve that best possible price, we then go to the CEO and say, your best solution at this time is an in-house employee bookkeeper. We'll continue to oversee that individual, but it's going to cut your cost versus a full-time outsource solution because there's overhead and other expenses. And then that repeats a controller. So as a company grows from startup to 100 million, they're going to go through each one of those phases. And ultimately, when the demand for CFO hours reaches 40 or 50 hours a week, we as a good CFO will go to the CEO and say, it's time to hire our replacement. We'll mentor and hand off. But that's how you achieve the best in class deliverables at the best possible price. The longer you can delay each one of those decisions to hire internally, the better individual you'll get. If you're stretching the budget and you're trying to hire a full-time CFO and you're $20 million in revenue, you're not going to get the same class of CFO that you need, the experience that you need even, as if you could put off that decision until you're $100 million. You're going to have more revenue to spend. You're going to get a better CFO, and you're going to get a CFO that's more in tune with what your needs are at that given point in time.
I want to go back for a moment here and talk about some of the different financial tools that a CEO needs to understand. And you've talked about the 13-week cash flow projection. What are some other tools that a CEO needs to understand?
We believe there are six essential tools, plus there's some analytics. And the analytics just help a company become more strategic, more profitable, more drought resistance, if you want to think about it that way, as to when things downturn. So the analytical tools are on top of our six essentials. The six essentials we start with are, number one, most companies that have achieved a certain amount of revenue, let's say 5 million or 10 million in revenue, they are probably already on accrual basis accounting rather than cash basis accounting. But when we come into small companies, often that's the first change that needs to be made. Often the CEO doesn't understand the difference. Cash accounting is easy because it's money came into the bank, it's money's in the bank, I got money to pay bills. And they run their company based upon a profit and loss that says they were making money and they've got cash in the bank. But that could also be just their spiral into the ground. They just don't know it yet. But the example we give about why accrual basis accounting is so important is if you had started a company January 1st, and in the month of January, you earned $250,000 in revenue through the products or services you delivered, and February 1st comes and COVID-19 hits and you're completely shut down. But in the month of February, you collect the $250,000 in revenue you earned in January. If you're on cash basis accounting says that February was a great month. But that's not true. January was a great month and February was a terrible month. And accrual basis accounting tells that story. So it's important not only to be GAAP or general accounting principle compliant, but if you're distributing financials to outside entities, whether that's the bank, an investor, a potential buyer, they have to be on accrual basis in order to be accurate and tell the true story of the company. If you're making decisions for your company based upon your historicals, you or your financial team, your CFO, and you're looking at cash basis accounting, you're not seeing the real trends that take place in your company. And you can have wild swings in your gross profit margin because it just depends on when you're collecting. So that's the first, accrual basis accounting. Number two, annual budget. I am surprised at the number of small and mid-sized companies that don't have a true annual budget. And one of the defining characteristics of the annual budget, it is a stake in the ground that once it's set for the next 12-month period, whether that's fiscal or calendar, does not change. And the pushback is, well, things change in my business. Things change in my industry. How can I have a budget that doesn't change? Well, the tool that you're actually referencing is a rolling 12-month forecast. That's the one that reflects the day-to-day, month-to-month, week-to-week changes that take place in your business and industry. But the purpose of the budget is to allocate company resources to each stakeholder, be that a department, be that an individual, and for the entire company at large, to allocate those resources for the next 12-month period and also set the expectations about the return on investment or the performance. So I had my budget for 2024 4 months ago. I had to have that because I was making commitments to companies, to events that we sponsor. How impactful would it be if I had to go back to those companies and I made commitments to the end of the calendar year of 2024? If I had to go back to them and say at the end of the first quarter, hey, you know what? My budget changed. Sorry. Can we get out of that commitment? Can I get my money back? I hope there's no penalty for that. So not only does that not ring true with most commitments, there's a cost if can even be reversed, but how inefficient does it make me because I never know what my resources to be able to invest are. There is a document that goes hand in hand with the annual budget, and it's called a budget to actual report. It's a monthly document. Generally, the controller would supply this because it's historical in nature, but it reports compared to the budget how that individual department and the company overall performed in the prior month against the budget and then year to date against the budget. And if it's as granular as the budget is, so if I receive my budget before the 12-month period began and every month I see how I'm delivering against that budget, against the resources I was giving, it's not a surprise where I am. The great thing about a budget is budgeted expenses should not be a surprise. I was reading a Wall Street Journal article just a month or so ago, and it was talking about how Wall Street uses the end of each year to cull or get rid of all the low performers. And the primary point of the article was most of these low performers had no idea they were low performers. And they were absolutely shocked that they're being released because they thought they were high performers. Well, if they were part of a monthly meeting where there was an actual budget report, where they knew what the expectations were against performance, and every month they learned how they performed against that, they would know where they stood. And it's not just being able to find weaknesses. Often it's being able to find opportunities. So if you've got a department or an individual or a division that is overperforming against their budget month after month after month, the question is, what are you doing differently? Did you find a new price point? Is it a new promotion? What are you doing differently that we might be able to apply elsewhere in the company? So we talked about the 13-week cash flow. That's the lifeblood flowing through the body of the company. That would be number four. Number five, I referenced briefly, and that's a rolling 12 or a rolling 12-month forecast. That is the tool that is updated continuously with the latest information from the company. And it gives the management team and the CEO a 12-month window, month by month by month, to be able to see how today's decisions are going to impact the company in each of those important areas, profit, value or equity, and the cash required to complete. If the financial team, in particular, the CFO is maintaining a rolling 12-month forecast so that the CEO has that reference point for all decisions, budgeting becomes very easy because they always have a report to show how they've performed and what their expectations are for the next 12 months. They could create a 12-month budget at any point in time during that 12-month period. Lastly, sixth tool is a five-year forecast, and it is an extension of the rolling 12, just going out 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You know, looking at the fourth and the fifth years by month doesn't make much difference. There's not much benefit in that. Annual is probably the good reference, but they still should be forecasting on a monthly basis because those dates are going to come up.
Well, appreciate you going into some detail on each one of those. So that is super helpful. I can't let you go without asking you about artificial intelligence. So has AI come to the financial side of the business? And if so, what's happening there? What do you see for the future of AI as it relates to the financial management of a company?
I attended a tech seminar a few months back in Birmingham, Alabama, and AI was one of the primary topics from many of the main stage speakers. And I connected with an individual by the name of Victor Cheng, a published author, great speaker, connected with him a few times since then. And I asked him that question about AI. And the message I took away from that was, one, the way AI thinks is more an extension of the way we humans think currently. That will change in the near future. So I don't think we're truly to the mature stage of AI yet, nor are we even in that phase yet, according to Victor and according to what I heard. But we asked Victor that question specifically. Can AI help us become faster, more efficient, in particular in our forecasting and in our analytics? His answer is not there yet. There's still a certain amount of understanding of a business, that unique business, and subjectivism and even gut instinct that brought the founders and the principals of the company to where they are today that AI just doesn't understand. So AI thinks more like, according to my conversation with Victor, more like a controller thinks. This is just numbers and facts and formulas. There's not an assessment of what they really mean. It's just a reporting of data. So I think that will evolve, and we're certainly going to keep an eye on it because I think it'll help us become more efficient in what we do and do it faster. But we haven't given up on the tried and true method of a true CFO being able to look into the future along with the CEO and determine where the company's going.
Excellent. Well, Scott, is there anything else that you want to add here that we perhaps haven't touched on yet?
We touched on it a little bit, and that was just the forward facing. You know, I talked about the tools, and a CEO might say, well, why on earth do I need a five-year forecast? I'm not even sure I need a rolling 12-month forecast, but I could live with looking 12 months into the future. But to invest in the CFO or the team that can look 2, 3, 4, or 5 years down the road, I'm not sure that's a value. That comes back to mindset. And it's one of the first things we talk about when we meet with a potential customer or client with the CEO. One of the first questions is what is your game plan for your company? Is there an exit on the horizon? If so, when or what triggers that? Is it a date? Is it an exit value? Is it your age? And what form does it take? Is it you turn over to your employees through an employee stock option? You have heirs that are going to take over. It's alarming how often that date is not known or what would trigger that. It reminds me of a story that was told by a business leader, an ecclesiastical leader by the name of Alvin Meredith III. And he tells a story about when he was 15 years old and he got his learner's permit to be able to drive. And his father said, do you want to go out and drive? Because he had to have a parent with him in the car, and he was excited. And they went out to this country road that was long and straight and had nobody on it. And they swapped seats. And his dad said, just pull out in the road and drive till I tell you to stop. Alvin said he drove for about a minute, and his dad finally said, pull over, Alvin, you're making me nauseous. You're swerving all over the road. And so he pulled over and said, Alvin, what are you looking at? And Alvin said, I'm looking at the road. And his dad said, Alvin, I'm watching your eyes. You're not looking at the road. You're looking at what is right in front of the car. You're never going to be able to drive straight if you don't look further down the road. And we know by experience that when it comes time to exit, that buyers reward companies for doing what they said they were going to do. So if you have a plan and you execute to that plan, you'll be rewarded. If you don't, you're too easily discounted.
Great place to wrap up there, Scott. So what would be the best way for folks to connect with you if they want to stay in touch?
My email address is scottc@preferredcfo.com. So S-C-O-T-T, the letter C as in last name Crawford, at preferredcfo.com. I'm obviously on LinkedIn. When you look on LinkedIn, you'll know you've got me if the word right underneath my picture is idiot. That's me. And there's a story behind that. Ethernet, happy to speak with anyone, help you drill down into your team and or tools, and help you become more strategic.
Scott, appreciate you being on the show today.
Absolutely, Steve. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.